I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. We all like positive feedback, being told just how great we are. Negative feedback, well, that's a whole other matter. Even if we're aware of our faults and weaknesses, it's hard to have someone criticize how we're performing on the job or parenting our kids or managing our lives and important relationships, especially from someone whose opinion matters. Honest feedback, sensitively delivered, can be helpful, even life-changing. But how many people know how to do that? Not many. Well, today on Radio Times, giving and receiving constructive criticism. We have two guests. Eli Finkels, a professor of psychology at Northwestern University and the Kellogg School of Management, wrote a book recently called The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work, and he joins us from the studios of Northwestern University. Eli Finkel, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
You're very welcome. And also with us is Debbie Goldstein. She's a principal and managing director of Triad Consulting Group. She teaches negotiations as a lecturer at Harvard Law School and Harvard Graduate School of Education. Debbie Goldstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be with you.
Let me start with just how horrible it feels to be criticized. And in preparation for the show, I was thinking about the times that I have been criticized, and there have been plenty of these times where you feel just ashamed, you feel naked, you feel exposed. Eli, why is it so hurtful?
Well, you've raised some of the most important issues. I mean, one of the things that's tricky about being criticized is you feel low power. You feel like the other person stands on a plane above you and is, casting judgment down upon you. And another is that all of us are human beings, right? The giver and the receiver, we're all human beings, and we all like to think positively about ourselves. And so when we receive feedback that is either inelegantly delivered or where we feel like it is unfair or we're not open to the feedback at this point, it can feel like an attack on our character, even when it's not intended as such.
Do you think, Debbie, that's why people would rather flee than face any kind of criticism?
I do. I mean, I think the challenge of feedback, especially receiving feedback, is that we have two core human needs, and the challenge of these two needs kind of sit at cross purposes. So on one hand, we really see this in resilience and happiness literature. We do have a need, a desire to learn and grow and get better. It just explains why we read nonfiction or watch documentaries. We want to learn, and we want to learn about ourselves. But the challenge is that other human need, I think, is a little bit what Eli spoke to and what you're speaking to, Marty, is that we also want to be accepted and respected, and depending on who the person is, maybe even loved, just the way we are right now. And so the very fact that someone is giving us particularly critical feedback is basically them telling us, like, with a few upgrades, if we could just tweak this and tweak that. And it feels really demoralizing. And so I do think that's where we get this sense of just, no, thank you, I'd rather, hide under my covers or flee.
Well, just as you said that, my heart rate started to go up and I started blushing. So there's obviously this kind of physiological response. What I hear both of you saying, and Eli, I'll go to you first, is that people who deliver criticism, whether it's a boss or perhaps a partner or a spouse, they don't maybe do a very good job of it. Is that true, Eli?
Yes, because when we're trying to deliver feedback, what's top of mind for us is to try to deliver that feedback. And, look, most people delivering feedback aren't monsters. They're aware that they're talking to another human being, at least at some general level. But they feel like there's this important piece of information that they need to deliver. And it's essential that the person listening to the feedback, the recipient of the feedback, is listening attentively and internalizes the feedback. And it's easy to focus a little bit too much when you're delivering feedback on the content that you're trying to deliver and a little bit too little on the fact that on the receiving side is a human being who, as Debbie said, has a desire to be appreciated and respected, a desire to maintain his or her sense of self-respect. And to the degree that we deliver feedback that is insufficiently attentive to the fact that we are, all of us are people who care about our reputations and we're prone toward being defensive when we feel attacked. If we don't attend enough to that, we'll end up giving feedback that falls on deaf ears.
Well, I wonder, Debbie, whether, and I'm just thinking about the person delivering the feedback, and we'll get to the receiver, whether many people wait too long. So by the time they give that feedback, they are angry and frustrated, and that creates this tense, conflicted environment.
That is 100% correctly. So I would agree, correct. I would agree with Eli that part of the challenge is that we're just not recipient focused when we give our feedback as givers. And then the other challenge is exactly as you say, which is that givers have their own discomfort with giving the feedback. And many of us are either avoidant by nature or just don't want to hurt the other person or don't want to get into the morass that it gets into. We know we might get a negative reaction. And so we avoid giving the feedback while in our head it's building and accumulating, and the behavior or personality type that's driving us crazy is just sort of continuing, because it turns out they haven't telepathically received the feedback that we have avoided.
They can't read our minds. Oh, my goodness.
They cannot read our minds. And so the resentment builds. We get irritated. And so I think you're exactly right. By the time we do give it, as givers, we're often incredibly unskillful at how we manage it because our own emotional triggers are at play. So I think avoiding is a huge part of the problem.
Eli, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I mean one of the solutions here is just to remain cognizant of the humanity, right? You as a deliverer of feedback are a human being with your own foibles and your own frustrations and perhaps insecurities, and often giving feedback is a stressful context. The person on the receiving end is at some risk of getting her back up or his back up in response to the feedback. And frequently you can benefit from acknowledging the humanity involved. So if you've made the mistake of not really addressing an issue until it has become a major issue, it's something that you can lead in with. And you can say, look, this is feedback that you were entitled to a while ago because it has been something that's been on my mind. And I apologize for the fact that I didn't bring this up earlier. And there's no way that I should have, expected you to know that this is something that was disappointing me or frustrating to me. So I apologize for that. But this is something that's been on my mind, and it's something that's important that we at least have a conversation about.
That's so interesting. I mean, to have the giver of the feedback or the criticism apologizing for their lateness in delivering it, Eli.
Yeah, well, I mean, go ahead, Debbie.
Well, I think that's crucial, actually, because part of what happens when any time there's kind of a deteriorating relationship dynamic is that each person is contributing to the problem. And when someone owns their contribution to the challenge in the dynamic, and particularly if that is a person who has quote unquote higher power, so sort of higher in the hierarchy of the organization, when the more senior person, the manager or the leader, owns their contribution first, and that is a contribution to the problem, saying, I'm sorry I didn't give this to you earlier. I love that phrasing. You were entitled to this earlier, and I apologize I didn't. When the power of someone owning their contribution has this incredible reciprocal effect, where it often makes the defenses of the person on the other side who is receiving the feedback also be in a much better place to own their contribution. We've seen this time and time again in the research, but also just anecdotally. And so there's huge power in that acknowledgement or apology.
And I'm curious, Eli, and to both of you, actually, then a honest thank you. Does that also help the relationship along, Eli?
Yeah. I mean, if you can...
I needed that, right?
Yes. Oh, you mean on the receiving side?
Yeah.
Yes. I mean, there's let me sort of comment on the first thing I was going to say, which is if you can frame your feedback within a broader context of appreciation that says, look, I'm about to give you some feedback about something that I'd like you to try to be better about, or at least like to get your perspective on. But let me start by saying, just how grateful I am for, that we get to work together every day, that I was lucky enough to get to marry you, whatever the context is, and some wonderful things on the giving end. And if you can contextualize the feedback that you're going to give as not a global damnation of the person's character, but really a broad sense of appreciation of who the person is and this relatively narrow thing that's important to me that we try to address, that is best. With regard to the receiving side, yes, if you can listen to the feedback and say, I hear what you're saying, and you know, I'll need to process it a little bit more because, you know, you could even acknowledge, you know, at first I don't like getting negative feedback. So I'm going to need to process that a little bit. I'm certainly taking you seriously, but I know that giving negative feedback isn't the easiest thing. And I just want you to know at this point that I'm grateful that you respected me enough to give me the feedback that you think I needed to hear.
Debbie, I was reading about something over the weekend in preparation for the show, something called a praise sandwich. Which is, let me explain to our listeners. I'd never heard of this. But when you're delivering, negative feedback or constructive criticism, whatever you want to call it, so the pieces of bread, that's the good stuff. The stuff that's in the middle, the sandwich part, that's the bad stuff. Do you like that idea?
I really hate that idea. I have such a reaction.
Go ahead.
Because, and we talk about this a lot in my consulting work and with my students, it feels like a trick, right? So the praise sandwich, once you lead in with the positive, people know the negative is coming. They know that the sort of meat of the sandwich, and that's a really important part of it, is that when you're giving it as a quote-unquote praise sandwich, you're like, here's some bread, here's the meat, which is the important part, that's the protein, that's the stuff you really need to take, and then I'm going to soften it with another little bit of praise. And I think people feel a little tripped, and then they also, it ends up feeling like a carb-free sandwich, right? Uh-huh. It just ends up with the meat. And so what I am much more a fan of is just being transparent. I actually think that appreciation is a kind of feedback. I think there are three kinds of feedback. There's appreciation, there's coaching, which is often where the more critical comes, and there's evaluation, sort of here's how you stand. And I think we actually need all three. And so instead of tricking people into a sandwich model, I'm much more inclined to just say, listen, in the course of this conversation, there's a ton of really good stuff that we need to talk about. And then there's some stuff that I think you need to work on. And so I want to talk about both. They're really important. You need to know what's going well and the areas I think you can improve on. Where do you want to start? And then they know there's no trick to it. They know that there's a lot of good stuff we're going to talk about. They know, and very specifically, and they know that there's some specific coaching that I might have to offer them. And then they have autonomy to choose. Where do you want to start? Is it better for you to start with the more positive so you know the context? Or is it better for you to start with what you need to work on? I think the sandwich feels like a little bit of a trick, and people sense it and then feel on edge when they start hearing the praise.
Let's take a very short break and then we'll get back to our conversation. I have to praise both of our guests. First of all, Debbie Goldstein was booked about 10 minutes ago and joins us on Radio Times. Thank you so much, Debbie. Don't go away. Again, she's principal and the managing director of Triad Consulting. She teaches negotiations as a lecturer at Harvard Law School, the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And our guest, Eli Finkel, rode his bicycle through the snow to get to the studio in Chicago to join us on Radio Times. He's a professor of psychology at Northwestern University. And he's got a book called The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work. You can join us at 1-888-477-9499. We're talking about giving and receiving criticism or negative feedback or feedback at all. And you can also send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscoane talking with our guests about learning how to give and receive criticism. And again, you can join us at 1-888-477-9499. And I'll read a bunch of comments that have come in through social media. Eli, I'm curious about criticism when it comes to marriage. It seems that that has got to be a more loaded proposition. Just, and we've been talking more about the work environment. How different is that?
Oh, it is a more loaded proposition. I mean, one of the ideas I play with in the book, the All or Nothing Marriage, is the idea that over the last 50 years, really 200 years, you've seen this increasing emphasis on this one relationship. That is, the marital relationship plays a much larger role in our emotional and psychological lives today than in the past. It used to be that people hung out in, you know, sex-segregated context, but now your spouse is supposed to be your best friend and your primary confidant, and that stuff's relatively new. And when it comes to the topic of giving feedback, especially negative feedback, the primary role that our spouse plays in our lives makes that feedback especially dangerous, right? Like if I'm dependent upon you not only to be the person who co-manages the household with me and helps raise the children with me and financially we're interdependent, but also you're my primary source of emotional fulfillment and emotional support, and now you're saying something that I'm doing something wrong or I'm flawed in some way, it's a deeply dangerous situation. And so a lot of the ideas we've been talking about become especially important to get right in terms of the nature of the feedback, how you go about giving the feedback. It's even more important to get that stuff right in the context of say, a romantic relationship than it is at work.
Sure. I mean, because in many ways your life depends on it. Plus, you're living with this person.
Yeah, exactly.
You don't get to go home at 5 o'clock or whatever. Let me ask you, and this is based on what both of you have said. It seems like being able to either both give or receive criticism means that you need to be self-aware. You need to understand your effect on other people, understand, and I'll put this first to you, to you, Debbie, about to knowing what your weaknesses are, what your strengths are, what your impact is on other people. But that requires a certain level of self-awareness that's sometimes not easy to have.
I think that's exactly right. I think part of the challenge of feedback is twofold. One, we all have blind spots, right? We all walk around the world and strangers on the street know things about us that we don't know about ourselves, including sort of, you know, what's on our face. But the impact we're having on others it's literally a blind spot to us. Mm. We do not know. And so it's why feedback is crucial. We need it. Because without having that feedback, we just don't know how we are landing, how we're impacting others. And on the other hand, because we hold these blind spots, when we hear feedback sometimes, it feels untrue because it sits in a blind spot. And so we get really defensive when someone tells us we've done something. Like I've had feedback before, I think many people have, of, you know, you need to watch your tone a little
right.
bit.
Sure.
And of course your response is, what tone? Right, which is the tone.
Exactly.
Because in your own mind, you're kind of unaware of your tone. And so it's really, really hard because I do think that being good at receiving and giving feedback demands a high degree of self-awareness. Mm-hmm. And we see that the most successful people and the most successful leaders, there's sort of studies that say that self-awareness is a key characteristic or criteria for that. And yet at the same time, we're all lacking self-awareness in certain spaces, which is why I think it's important to both have the humility to know that there are just things about ourselves we don't know, and so feedback is so crucial to get that. And it's important for givers to understand the fact that sometimes they are offering feedback in a space that feels untrue, and so we have to be sort of sensitive about it.
And by blind spot, meaning that we're obviously looking out in the world, but the world is looking back at us, but we don't necessarily know what the world thinks of us.
That's exactly right. There are just things about ourselves that we don't know about ourselves. It sits in a blind spot. It's sort of like when you're driving your car, if you drive a car, and those side view mirrors are incredibly helpful, but there is a blind spot that you just can't see things that are right there and that actually are dangerous to you, and that you're a danger to them, but you cannot see it. And so
No, that's okay. Go ahead, Eli.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. I wanted to chime in on that because I think this is one of the most important things to appreciate about the process of giving feedback is we perceive the world from one perspective and the person receiving the feedback will be perceiving the world from a different perspective. That is inevitable. And so what is it that we can do? How is it that we can give better feedback? How is it that we can be more receptive to feedback? It's one of the ideas that we've tried to investigate in my lab at Northwestern. And one of the studies that we did, I think, is particularly relevant here. We recruited 120 married couples, and we studied them over time, and every 4 months they wrote about the biggest fight they had in their marriage over the previous 4 months. And then in the second year, we randomly assigned half of them not only to write about the conflict that they'd had, but also to try to think about that conflict from the perspective of a neutral third party who wants the best for everybody. And what we found is if you plot people's relationship satisfaction over time, even their level of passion in the marriage over time, what we find is that on average, satisfaction tends to go down. That's true in our study, but in pretty much every other study that I've ever seen. But that we can eliminate that effect, that downward trajectory in satisfaction, we eliminate if we train people to think about conflict in their relationship from this generous third-party perspective. And I think the main reason why is because from our own perspective, as we look at the world through our own two eyes, we can get focused on the justification of our own perspective, the righteousness of our own perspective, and what the other person is doing wrong. Once we force ourselves to step outside and look at the two interactants, the giver of the feedback and the recipient of the feedback, it's easier for us to channel the humanity of the other side, to recognize ways that we ourselves might be biased, and it does indeed benefit the relationship to adopt that third-party perspective.
That third-party might be a therapist or somebody? I mean, the role that a therapist plays?
Yes, exactly. Now we actually just said the manipulation that we had, and it was actually pretty minimal. People wrote 3 times for 7 minutes over the course of a year. So over the year, they spent 21 minutes. And all we assigned them to do is adopt the perspective of a third party who wants the best for everybody. But yes, some people might adopt a therapeutic perspective. You could even imagine adopting God's perspective or perhaps a parent-in-law's perspective, just anybody who wants the best for everybody.
Well,
negotiation literature, that's called looking from the balcony, which is a very similar sense. And so it's another sort of frame on it is watching the play. Like if you were the director or the audience member in a play, how would you describe it neutrally? Because you're not involved and you're sort of looking down from the balcony. And so that's very, very powerful anytime there's conflict or anytime there's a feedback conversation. Because we do get so stuck in our own perspective, which is where, as Eli said, the real danger comes.
We have so many comments here. An email from Julie, she says, what's the best way to start the conversation when giving feedback to an employee? I notice when I approach the conversation or set up time to meet, the person may already enter the conversation feeling scared or nervous or defensive. A very practical question. Eli, can you give Julie some pointers?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it's start with the humanity. You're a person. The person you're giving feedback to is a person. And, you know, at a very practical level, there's something that the two of you need to do, but never forget the humanity involved. And, mm-hmm. you know, Debbie said how you know, she prefers an approach, and I do as well, that's very straightforward, that says, look, I have some feedback I need to give you here. It's something that I want to raise because I think it's something that I need to see improvement on. I'm not as opposed to the praise sandwich idea, but I agree that it can be delivered in a kitschy sort of way. Mm-hmm. But if you contextualize it by saying, like, this is a specific thing that we need to work on, and it's very, very clear that this isn't a criticism of the person herself, but of a particular behavior that's going on, and then you're sort of straightforward about the fact that this is something that needs to be discussed, and it's important that we come to some resolution about it. That's a way to break through the awkwardness, get everybody on the same page about what needs to happen, while also hopefully minimizing the amount of defensiveness on the other side.
Debbie, you might want to respond as well, but I wanted to pick up on something you said earlier about appreciating and coaching and then evaluating, but I wonder whether there isn't enough appreciation that goes on so that when there is some kind of negative criticism, we can, in our own way, sort of balance the pros and the cons.
I think that is one of the biggest challenges. There was a Department of Labor study done about 10 years ago that said that 93% of workers in this country feel underappreciated.
Wow.
That is a staggering number. And I think, and we sort of joke that we think that many offices and work environments suffer from mutual appreciation deficit disorder, which if you spell out that acronym, it's MAD. Walking around constantly feeling underappreciated. So I do think that balancing appreciation with your coaching is crucial. I will say one other thing just to answer Julie's question, though,
sure.
Which is I think that there's a step minus one in these conversations, which is I think that in any feedback relationship, whether it's a marriage or a manager-director-port relationship, I think it is incredibly helpful before you have to give feedback. So not in the feedback conversation, but in a conversation prior to that, to have what we call a meta conversation, where you're both talking about how the two of you best like to give and receive feedback.
Huh.
So you're not saying, I have feedback to give you in this moment. You're saying generally, like, what if I were to give you coaching, how would you best like to receive it? Are you someone who needs time to process if I have criticism for you, or do you want to just sort of have the conversation in the moment? You know, give me coaching on how you best like to receive feedback, and let me just offer you some sense that I'm going to be giving you some feedback, and here's sort of some of my feedback tendencies. I think it's incredibly helpful. It actually, when we have clients who do this, who sort of have this meta, how do you like to generally get feedback? How do I like to generally give feedback? These conversations, they report that when they have the subsequent, actually substantive feedback conversations, they are much more effective. They are, there's less sort of strong negative emotion in them, and they're much more efficient, which I think is another challenge of what stops us from having feedback conversations, is they feel really time consuming in a work life where we don't have time to get sucked into an hour of processing something.
That's really helpful. Email from Julie. I hope that was helpful. Let me read some more comments that we have here. One from Elise. I've gotten to the point in my life where I believe anyway I can learn and grow from constructive feedback and take nothing personally. And if it's hurtful, I just let it go. It's ultimately not about me. It tells me more about the other person. An email from Bill. With age, I've gotten better at receiving criticism, but when I was younger, it was harder. It's also been equally hard for me to receive praise gracefully. Any connection there, he asks. And a comment from Judy. For me, many times it's how it's delivered and by whom. A tweet from James. I would say something positive to soften the blow. If you look hard enough, there must be something that is positive, right? That gives you a flavor, a feel for how people are responding to our conversation, talking about giving and receiving constructive criticism. You can send us a comment, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can call us at 1-888-477-9499. Eli, let me start with you, but Debbie, I want to hear from you as well. What if the criticism is just, it's unfair, it is overly hurtful, it is not helpful, it's, you know, designed to hurt the other person? How do you deal with something like that?
You mean on the receiving side, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, we've mostly focused thus far on how to give effective feedback, which of course is crucial. But honestly, feedback is a relational dance, right? It's not something that one person does or the other person does. It is something that two people do. And yes, the recipient side is crucial. I mean, again, there's some work that some of the work that I know best is in the relationship space or the marriage space. And two of the things that a lot of people do, and they're indicators of problematic relationships. One of them is defensiveness, mm-hmm. which is that we counterattack rather than engaging with the other person. The other person's concern. And I assure you that this is not something that only happens to those weird people who are flawed. Like the urge to counterattack when you feel like you've been criticized, perhaps unfairly, is very, very strong. And the second receiver side thing that is a pretty significant sign of problems is when you stonewall, when you clam up, right? Like it's hard to do this in the office if your boss is giving you feedback and you're a mature person. It's hard to stonewall, but I assure you that in people's personal lives, they somewhat regularly will sort of shut off and try to distance themselves and do the equivalent of putting their fingers in their ears and saying la 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 la, I can't hear you. To this, you know, when you truly get unfair feedback, this is a quote I jotted down. I was hoping I'd get a chance to say it. The Supreme Court Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg got advice from her mother-in-law, I think on her wedding day, that says, in every good marriage, it helps to be a little bit deaf. And I think that is broadly true, that sometimes if you're self-confident and you don't feel overly attacked by it, if you can let some of that stuff roll off without internalizing it or thinking your partner is a monster, that's a pretty good option.
And from the work environment, Debbie, how do you see that? And oftentimes people will feel as if the criticism is unfair because it's criticism, but there can be criticism that truly is unfair and wrong.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And so I sort of go step one, which is the advice I give is when you get feedback, whether it feels right or whether it feels completely ridiculous, untrue, unfair, my advice is actually don't accept or reject it at either one immediately. Really right. Work to understand it, because what we find a lot, and I am guessing this happens in marriage because I happen to be married, so I can
we're all experts, right?
Yeah, exactly. But I certainly see this in the work environment, that givers often give feedback in the form of a label. right? I need you to be more communicative. That wasn't professional. I need you to step it up. And these are labels that people offer, givers offer, and in their mind, it's very clear what they mean when they say, I need you to be more professional, or that wasn't professional. In the mind of the receiver, it is, first of all, it's just a big label that, of course, we're going to reject because it feels opaque. But the reality is we don't really understand it. And so on the behalf of the receiver, what we often advise people to do is to ask questions. So when you say, you know, that my work was not up to par, can you be more specific? What did you mean by that? Can we look at it? Can we get really granular? What are the expectations that I didn't align on from your point of view? You know, what data are you looking at? What are the observations you have? And then, so that's where is the feedback coming from? But then this is a crucial part of it. We often, when people give us feedback, it's not constructive, meaning we don't know what to do with it. So then as a receiver, we often then have to ask the questions. And if I were to be more professional in your eyes, or if my work were to be up to snuff, can you be, so like, what would it look like? What would be different? Yeah. Can you paint me the picture? Can you be sort of helpful in terms of what specifically I can do differently that would make you happy in this perspective? And once you understood the feedback, then first of all, you're in a conversation with the giver, because I think sometimes poorly delivered feedback is delivered as a message. And I think feedback is not a message. Feedback is a conversation. And so then if you've asked these questions, you're in the conversation, which then allows you as the receiver, if it feels unfair, to offer your perspective. So, you know, it's really helpful to understand how you're seeing it. I see it a little differently. I wonder if we can talk about that.
Well, let's take another short break, and then we'll get back to our conversation with Debbie Goldstein and Eli Finkel. We are talking about giving and receiving criticism, negative feedback, constructive criticism, 1-888-477-9499. Much more after the short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moss-Cohen talking with Eli Finkel. He's in Chicago. He's a professor of psychology at Northwestern University and the Kellogg School of Management, author of a book entitled The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work. Also with us, Debbie Goldstein, and she is a principal, the managing director of Triad Consulting Group. She teaches negotiation as a lecturer at the Harvard Law School and Harvard Graduate School of Education. Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Kenny says, as a veteran designer, feedback and criticism are a large part of the job. Compliments and praise are rare. Criticism is constant. It can erode your self-worth. Most people are happy to be critical, much less motivated to give an appreciation. I want to pick up on that. Let me add Julie to that. Learning to take feedback is hugely important in creative fields, writing, art, and dance. Do your guests have any particular advice for receiving critique without letting it stall your creative effort? So two comments from the creative world. Eli, what do you say in response?
I mean, those are crucial issues for sure. And I was alarmed earlier when I heard Debbie mention those data that 93% of people in the business world feel underappreciated. And here we're seeing some evidence from the art world. I mean, that's very sad, right? So if we as a society are creating a social context in which the overwhelming majority of people, whether they're in the corporate world or in the art world or whatever, feel underappreciated for their contributions, boy, I feel like we need a fairly broad restructuring of how we go about giving feedback. And we probably need to do a whole lot more of giving feedback that's positive, and instead of having a default that says when you do good work, that's just expected, and anything that deviates from the expectations is always going to be bad. Maybe we need to be more attentive when we've hired a contractor, when we're supervising an employee, when we're interacting with our spouse, more attentive for things that deviate from the norm on the upside, to say, wow, that was a really thoughtful thing that you just did, or that that feature that you added to the kitchen is just beautiful and elegant, and it's a small feature, but I really noticed it and appreciate it.
Well, I wonder, Debbie, whether there's a belief that the criticism is more of a motivator than praise.
Yeah, and I just think that's really wrong. I think that actually appreciation is the fuel that allows us to then feel safe and trust in the relationship so that we can hear the critique, because we feel like you get me, you know me, you appreciate who I am. And so the fact that you're offering me some constructive feedback or some critique means you're really helping me. Where I think if we don't have that appreciation, it just feels destructive. It just feels sort of cruel. And so the one thing I will just say to Kenny, and I think Julie was the second person, is this, that there's actually a lot of power in being the receiver. And this is a funny flip on feedback, because I think for many, many years, we've taught that givers have the power, and that givers should be the ones that we teach how to do this feedback thing. Let's teach them how to say it better. Let's give them scripts. Let's offer them word choices. Let's give them ideas like this praise sandwich. But actually, if we all think about it, the person who is in charge in the feedback relationship is the receiver.
Oh, that's interesting.
Because it is the receiver who's going to decide, am I even going to listen to you? Do I even respect you enough to listen to you? It is the receiver who's going to think about the feedback that they've heard or not. It's the receiver who's going to sort through what feels right or what feels wrong about it. And it's the receiver who's either going to change behavior and take some of that feedback, if it's coaching, or not. And so I think when you're in a receiving space, while it can hit us emotionally, if we can sort of just have sort of look from the balcony and think about it kind of neutrally and remove some of the emotional sting of it, we can decide to sort through what feels right about it and what feels unhelpful, what feels just vindictive or just critical for the sake of being critical, and what might we actually learn that would be helpful. And I think sometimes just having something as simple as like a ledger where we have a little grid of what is this feedback about? And what is this feedback not about? And what would be helpful? What could I learn about this feedback? And what is unhelpful or untrue? And then we kind of get to sort and decide. And my hunch, and I think a few of your comments have said this, is that most of the time we can find a nugget that's helpful, but we don't have to just take feedback full stock and have it be some sort of indictment on our who we are or whether we're good at our craft, whether we're a designer or a manager or a writer.
Well, I'd be curious, Eli, do you think that works the same way in a long-term committed relationship or a marriage?
What in particular?
Well, that the receiver has more, maybe has more power than they think they do.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, and I actually think that's probably the right way to phrase it, right? So it can feel, I mentioned this earlier, it can feel very disempowering to get feedback, that one person is standing over or above the other person saying, you did this and it was wrong or it was bad. And being the recipient of that feedback can feel very, very disempowering and shaming sometimes, especially if it's delivered, the feedback is delivered inelegantly. Yes, to the degree that we can take ownership, right, that we can take some amount of responsibility to say, okay, well, I just got that feedback. That wasn't a moment or a situation that I set up. Somebody else was setting up that situation. I was on the receiving end of that feedback. Now the feedback is mine, and I get to determine to a reasonable degree the extent to which I find value in the feedback, the extent to which I'm going to change in response to the feedback. I mean, the most important thing for sustaining professional work relationships and ideally, you know, strong intimate relationships as well, is when you're at that moment of receiving the feedback, you will often experience some amount of desire to clam up or lash out or feel angry in response. And one of the worst things that can happen, or one of the things that really makes feedback go haywire, is when the recipient of the feedback, you know, attacks back or is angry and unreceptive to the feedback in the moment. So what another way that the recipient can feel empowered is to say, you know, I hear you. I need to think more about what you're saying here. I need to reflect back a little bit more on what my behavior has actually been like. And certainly I'll have a response for you. But for now, I appreciate that you gave me the feedback, and rest assured that I am listening to what you say. And that is not the same thing as saying you're right or I'm bad. It's saying, yeah, we are two people, both mm-hmm. of whom have self-respect, and you've offered a perspective, and I'm going to take your perspective seriously, and I'll get back to you and let you know how I'm, you know, how I'm going to respond, how I'm going to change, if at all.
Sounds like feedback on the feedback.
Yeah.
Let me read an email from Paul just because he says, this is directed to Radio Times, probably to me. I confess to criticizing you, but I tried to do it with humor. I appreciate that, Paul. An email from Hansen says, great program, wonderful guest. How does one criticize one's boss without threatening our job? Thank you, which is a same question that Jack from Springfield has about how employees can complain or, I guess, criticize their boss. Jack, go ahead. You're on Radio Times.
Yeah. A question I thought was appropriate. We always get criticism from our bosses, but what happens when we need to go the other way?
And criticize them, you're saying?
Yeah. Or offer feedback that may be viewed as critical.
That's a touchy question. Debbie, you want to take that?
Yeah, it's a great question and a really hard one. And just to say, it is also really culture and context specific, because there are some organizational cultures where this is really easy to do and the hierarchy is flatter and everyone's candor and feedback is really welcomed, and some where it is just much trickier, either because the culture is trickier or because you're specific idiosyncratic relationship with your boss or superior or your boss's boss is tricky. What can be helpful is to frame it in the form of a request. So to say, you know, I have some thoughts that I'd love to share. I'm wondering if we might have that conversation. Mm-hmm. So you're sort of just asking for permission to have it. And then when actually offering the feedback, framing it in the form of a request to say something like, it would really help me if, you know, when we're in a team meeting, if you have feedback for me, if maybe you wouldn't offer it in public, if you would pull me aside. Or it would really help me if, when you're offering critique, if you would do it in writing, XYZ, whatever your feedback for them is. When there's hierarchy, and particularly when there's sort of sensitivity and you don't know how it will be taken, again, asking permission to have the conversation and framing it as a request can be very helpful. And the third thing I would say is, is that if you're offering sort of critique or criticism, being also offering a solution. Don't just say, you know, please stop doing that, or I don't like the way the organization does this, but coming up with solutions or ideas for what might be helpful or what you might think would work can be helpful. Because I coach a lot of CEOs who say, I cannot stand it when people just come to me with problems. I want them to offer me a solution. I want them to tell me what would be better. If they don't like this, what would they like?
What do you think, Eli? Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I had a couple thoughts just to build on what Debbie was saying. One of which is, to the degree that you can frame the request, frame the feedback in terms of what's good for the organization, what's good for the collective, that's really best. And the second point, and I'll give an example here in a moment, the second point is you can focus on the self, right? And to some degree, this applies in general when we're giving feedback, is instead of saying, you did this and it's bad, to talk about, you know, use I language is the sort of the famous way of talking about this, like here's the experience I had. So for example, if you feel like your boss gives you feedback that's just deflating, you know, you might say, look, I have a request. I know that when you give me feedback, it's only oriented toward helping me get better, and I really want to be better, so I appreciate that feedback. But sometimes in the directness with which you give me the feedback, I do internalize it, and it actually deflates me, and it makes me feel like I'm distracted for the rest of the day and unmotivated. And so I guess my request would be that when you give me feedback, if you could do it in a way that's a little bit less direct, a little bit warmer, then I certainly will be able to react a little bit better to that and hopefully remain more productive in the work for the rest of the day.
Let me read some more comments. A tweet from Carla. This makes me sad. Can we no longer criticize participation generation without hurting them? None of us are perfect and need to see criticism as a growth tool, not as a personal attack. An email from Jamie. Could you discuss how to provide feedback between a parent and an adult child in their 20s who is struggling? And that's not a lot of for us to go on. But Eli, perhaps I'll go back to you only because you look at marriages and these more intimate relations. Is there suggestion about how a parent can help a struggling 20-year-old?
I mean, this is a really big issue. Yeah. And the fact is, yeah, we would need a little bit more information about this particular context for to offer concrete suggestions. But this might be a place where, you know, better to keep your mouth shut, right?
Right.
So if you feel like, you know, why didn't you get a job or why aren't you applying more, right? You can get to a point where you, as the parent of the adult child, end up being a big nag. And look, I can easily understand why one would feel like that, especially because you want the best for your kid. You're trying to motivate the kid, for example. But remember also that there's a whole range of roles you play in that kid's life, and somebody who's struggling in his 20s may well benefit from having a whole lot of at least one place where he can turn, where there's just really unconditional support, and it's not sort of chronically clouded with a feeling that you're a disappointment to your parent.
Debbie, I wonder, too, whether it's a cowardly thing to send an email versus having some kind of a face-to-face or voice-to-voice interaction with someone when it comes to constructive criticism.
Yep, I think I love that question. And frankly, my answer is it depends on what the preferences of those two people are. So I think there are some people who actually prefer to get it on email or at least get a headline on email, because then they can think about it, metabolize it, marinate in it, think about how they are feeling about it and how they might respond to it, and then they'd follow up in a conversation. And there are other people, and I would be one of them, who I don't want to get it over email because I will then fill in all sorts of inferences that are incredibly unhelpful, and then I am spinning a story that is totally unhelpful. But so the advice, you know, used to be or generally is like, don't do it over email, but I actually won't give that advice because there are some people who they really do prefer it. And so, again, I'm going to go back to something that I described earlier, which is having a pre-conversation about how people like to give and receive feedback. And actually, we sort of have a few that we offer, you know, a few key questions, and email is one of them. Do you like to get feedback over email? Do you not like to get feedback over email? I would say email alone is never a good thing. If you're using email, it's sort of as a precursor to a larger conversation. But again, I do think some people use it cowardly.
Cowardly.
Eli, we're type on us.
Yeah,
screen.
Yeah, no, I hear you.
I think it's important to know.
And Eli, we're almost out of time here, but I want to give you a chance to respond to that as well.
Yeah, I was hoping that you would. Debbie raises a really interesting idea that the way we need to give feedback needs to be sensitive to the recipient of the feedback. But in general, I think email is a very dangerous option. I agree that there will be exceptions now and again, but as a default, I think giving critical feedback via email, where you don't have all the social cues and you can't calibrate your message to how the individual's responding, is a dangerous option. And if your motivation for doing it is that you sort of don't want to do the awkward face-to-face thing, I think that is pretty much never a compelling argument for taking the easy way out.
Well, you both have given us a lot to think about, a lot of things to do as well, and perhaps do better. Eli Finkel, thank you so much for joining us today in Radio Times.
Thanks for having me.
You're welcome. He's a professor of psychology at Northwestern University and the Kellogg School of Management. His most recent book is The All or Nothing Marriage, How the Best Marriages Work. Debbie Goldstein, thank you very much for joining us on Radio Times as well.
Great to be with you.
Nice to have you with us. And she's Principal Managing Director of Triad Consulting Group. Again, she teaches negotiations as a lecturer at Harvard Law School and the Harvard Graduate School of Education. And that's it for today's edition of Radio Times. Thanks so much for those comments and calls. Diana Martinez, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times. The show produced by Debbie Builder, John Ahrens, and Trinae Nuri. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thanks for joining us.